The DC Comics Podcast, Episode 6. I'm your host, Adam, and with me is my co-host, as always, Jordan. Jordan, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Adam. How are you doing, man?
Pretty good. And we have a guest this week, don't we, Jordan?
We do indeed. My good friend, Jasmine Alexander, a big fan of the Arrowverse shows, and I thought she'd be perfect to come in and review the premieres with us. So hello, Jasmine.
Hello, everyone. It's great to be here and meet you all and see everyone. Well, not see, but hear.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so since you mentioned the Arrowverse, actually, you know what, before we do that, just if you guys don't mind, how do you guys know each other? How do you guys...
We met at Dragon Con, actually, this year, so that was a lot of fun.
Oh, sweet.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah, we had some mutual friends because I have, like, some of my fandom groups that we meet up when we go to cons, and when I met up with them this year, he had somehow canoodled in with them, and then we ended up hanging out for like 4 days there. And then it's been pretty cool.
Well, good. That's good to hear, and that's the kind of experience that you hope to have when you go to these things. You meet like-minded people, and you just hang out and, you know, talk about things you love, and that's how fandom should be, instead of bickering online and what most fandom sometimes engages in. So it's a refreshing change to hear about that. So that's good. Since we're doing the Arrowverse premieres, it's pretty kind of, actually, this is coincidental, because we have some mostly brief bits of TV news. And Jasmine, you off-air told us about news regarding the actress that plays Thea's contract on Arrow.
Yes, Willa Holland. Because I was reading up with her, the news kind of broke over the last day or so that, because people were wondering after the premiere, since she's, spoiler ahead, she is in a coma, if that means this sort of her way of getting written off the show. And it's just, and it was broken that, same as last year, Willa Holland requested a reduced number of episodes of that season and the same this season. But that is sort of good news because it means that she is still going to reappear. And this is not like a slow death, but it is showing that we may see less of her. But according with her storyline, we may connect it with Roy, because Roy Harper is coming back, Colton Haynes, who we all love. And he has his own little storyline, but also connected with Thea. So we're looking forward to seeing what's coming up down the line.
Good. So if anybody's worried that she's going anywhere, she's not. This was all planned, the episode count and such. So no need to worry in that regard. And Jordan, you said there was also news about regarding Legends of Tomorrow.
That's Victor Garber, who plays Martin Stein, is going to be exiting the show this season, because I believe he's going to be on Broadway. So they're going to have to write him off the show, which is going to be really interesting. I'm kind of disappointed about it a little bit, just because I really love Martin Stein on Legends, but it's going to be really interesting how they do this, though, because of course he's one half of Firestorm, so they're going to have to find a creative way, I guess, to get around that, or we're going to have to, you know, what's going to happen to Jax is really the big question here. So yeah, what do you guys think about this?
Well, I think it's going to go either one of two ways. They'll either give Jax the full brunt of the Firestorm ability, or they'll find another. They'll somehow work in another half, like the other half. Or they could do like they've done in various comics and animation, where it's you hear, like, it's like the voice inside his head kind of thing. That could be a route that they go. So I don't know, but as far as I know, Jax is still staying on the show, so we're gonna have a Firestorm.
I mean, technically, Legends is supposed to be a ragtag group of people they're kind of picking up along the way. That happened with Vixen last year, and now we're getting another Middle Eastern character, female character this season. So they can technically, it is per their formula to pick up a random person and just have them just kind of fit in. So I will miss Victor Garber because I feel like that relationship, that kind of father, son, uncle, maybe brother, whatever relationship they have is going on, is very nice. But I am still glad that Jax is going to be there. I'm just wondering how they're going to fill that role.
I'm wondering, in the comics in Blackest Night, there was this really heartbreaking scene where one half of Firestorm was killed. And so I wonder if they do. I mean, what, it wasn't Martin Stein in that comic. He wasn't part of Firestorm at that point. But I'm wondering if they adapt that in some way.
I mean, they did. I mean, in the premiere episode, they did talk about the fact that he wanted to be back for his granddaughter's birth. So that may be a way to do it peacefully, and then somehow him and Vince, somebody else, or because I mean the way they found Jax is, remember, they had to interview other people who had been affected by the particle accelerator, and then they were able to form that connection. So I mean, technically, if they do another search and then allow him to go be with his daughter and his wife, they could do that. They just wonder how.
Yeah, that's a good point. I also think I heard some speculation online. I can't remember who said this, that maybe his daughter will become the other half of Firestorm, though, and she'll team up with Jax.
I wonder how that's going to work, being fresh out of childbirth / pregnant.
Yeah, I think that's kind of wishful thinking. Like, I can't see. I mean, I know this show is out there, but I doubt somebody that just gives birth is going to want to, hey, I'm going to leave my baby and come travel through time with you guys. I don't see that as being the right, the proper way to go if I was in charge of doing it. So, yeah. But it may be an option. I just doubt that's a valid option. But I don't know how many episodes he has left. But whatever it is, I'm looking forward to whatever remaining performances we have of him, because I think he's a great actor. I've loved him since Alias. So it'll be sad to see him go, but I'm sure they'll, like I said, I trust the producers behind the Arrowverse to find a worthy replacement.
Yeah, for absolutely. Sure.
Speaking of the Arrowverse, the shows are back. It's putting a lot of putting my PVR to work, I'll tell you that much. And why don't we get started? And how we're going to talk about them is just basically the way they aired. So we're going to start with Supergirl. And I'm going to let our guest, Jasmine, tell us some of the things she liked or didn't like about Supergirl.
Oh, Supergirl. It is my female love, because it really was originally concept as being about so much empowerment, and they've had their ups and downs along the way. I, in actuality, enjoyed the premiere. We got to see Odette make her sort of soft premiere as going to be our big bad this season, which was great. I feel like that her descent into evilness, they say, is already going to parallel with Kara's. So as Kara's struggling with whether she wants to be human, and she's kind of wanting to give up her humanity, Odette is going, Rain is going to be struggling with wanting to keep it and maybe coming to the conclusion that she can't. And considering we've already been introduced to her daughter, I just already know that's just going to try to kill me emotionally by the time this gets through. So I'm looking forward to that. The twist of Lena buying Catco instead of the other guy there, it was a twist I did not quite see coming, but I do recognize that it was a good way to, as they wanted to, have her interact more with the cast. Because I read an interview earlier that she kind of was really dependent upon Kara and Kara alone as a storyline last year, and you can only kind of do that for so long before you get stagnant. So this is a way to really bring her into the forefront and do that. And then, of course, is our main character, Kara. This whole darkness of season three. Ironically, I want to parallel Arrow and Flash of season three has always been one of the darkest. So this, her descent into who she is very familiar to us who have kind of watched a few of the other shows as they approach this milestone. But she does have an interesting twist, which is the fact that she's been one person for so long repressed, and she came into another side of herself, and now she's wondering, was the person she has been hiding in for so long even worth going through? To me, it was a very good start. I don't know how long she's going to stay in the dumps. Because Supergirl is more of a ladder show, I am wondering how they're going to balance that. Because even Flash was supposed to be a ladder show, and it didn't quite stay that way in season three. That was one of his biggest critiques. But Kara in itself, despite how similar people feel about the Caramel relationship, she does... she has earned her right degree for someone that she fell in love with. So I am very glad that they gave her time to process, but that at the same time, they seem to have brought back the sister relationship, which is literally my heart of the show. The Danvers sisters are always my most poignant moments of the show because they're so emotional. They're so charged with people who love each other on screen and off screen and have history and chemistry. And so one of the things, as they said, of season three they're going to focus more on was bringing back that Danvers sisters that was really so poignant and so important to season one. So I'm looking forward to that and John Jones's storyline coming in and his relationship with Alex in his own way. So I feel like this was a very good start, and I'm hoping that they continue on this momentum.
All right, Jordan, what were your thoughts on Supergirl?
Yeah, well, first off, I want to say that I really agree with Jasmine about Rain. I'm so excited about Rain this season, and I think what we saw of her in the premiere was really exciting. And I know Adam, you're gonna kill me for bringing up Smallville again, but does Rain not parallel Davis Bloom so much on Smallville already? That's the way I'm really seeing that they're going about with her character with Odette. Playing Rain, and I think that's really cool the way they're doing this. In terms of Kara being sort of having being darker this season, and the show as a whole being a little bit darker, I saw that coming based on the Comic Con trailer this year for Supergirl. And even though I love sort of how bright Supergirl is typically, I think it's interesting to see this as a nice change of pace. And so that was something that really caught my eye in the Comic-Con trailer, and I really liked how that played out here in this first episode. And that also sort of reminded me of Smallville in terms of Kara sort of rejecting her Kara Danvers persona and sort of going full force in her Supergirl persona, because that's something very similar to what Clark did at one point on Smallville. I think that we're sort of, like, I wasn't sure how long that was going to last this season. I think we're already moving away from it just based on the way the premiere ended. You brought up the scene, I think, with Jean and Alex. I thought that was one of the most emotional scenes of the premiere. I thought that was great. Really, I love seeing Jean as sort of a father figure to Kara and Alex. And so I think any time that we see that is, I really enjoy it. In terms of... Lena and her purchasing Catco. Well, that sort of leads into. I wanted to talk a little about Morgan Edge, because I really liked what we saw of Adrian Pastar as him in this premiere. He's one of those characters that I feel like you love to hate, because he's like, he's so terrible. He's like such an awful person that you can see, but it's like it's sort of in a really juicy way where you sort of just eat it all up. And I really think that he sort of stole some of the scenes that he was in. I also really liked I'm really curious about these sort of dreams that Kara is having, because I'm wondering if they're somehow, because we saw that Rain was also having one, and I'm wondering if they have sort of some kind of mental connection, whether Supergirl and Rain are going to have some sort of mental link between them, where they both have dreams. I really liked seeing Erica Durance as our new Astra in as our new Allura, I should say. In the, I guess if we ever do see Astra again in some sort of flashback, maybe she would play her now. But anyway, as Allura, I should say, in this dream. And I also liked seeing Mon-El as well in that dream. And I thought it was really heartbreaking how when Supergirl sort of woke up, she was looking around the city, and I thought it was really well done. So I loved this premiere. I thought it was super, I'm okay with saying that.
You're just gonna go full cheese tonight, aren't you? You're just gonna go right into it.
How about you, Adam?
Well, I knew you were gonna mention Smallville as I was watching the episode. I said, you know, I was marking it down. I'm like, okay, he's gonna make a Smallville reference here and here and here. So I had it sort of timestamped as to when you were gonna make a Smallville reference. And you'll be happy to know that I was right. I just to touch on what both of you mentioned right off the bat in the fact that Kara was sort of going down a through her grief for the loss of Mon-El was going down a darker path. It's certainly justifiable, no argument there. But I given what happened with Flash and the reaction to its darker turn last year, I don't see this as lasting too long, this dark veering away from her Supergirl the Kara Danvers persona, because they sort of started the process of transitioning Kara sort of quote unquote back to normal, you know, near the end of the episode. So I can't see it lasting long. She may flirt with it back and forth, but I in terms of a prolonged course for the majority of the season, I don't see that happening at all. And honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if we see Mon-El either next week or the week after. At this point, the Arrowverse shows don't, you know, like for instance, I don't want to get into it, but you'll see where I'm going with Flash. They don't seem to prolong periods with storylines that I sometimes think they should. I think they wrap things up too quickly and too neatly sometimes. And this kind of, I get the sense that they're going to do that with this here as well. I really liked Morgan Edge. I really liked his inclusion in this show. I love Adrian Pastar. He's becoming the go-to actor for superhero shows. He's been in, obviously, Heroes. He's been in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is what I call my insomnia show. It puts me to sleep every time I watch it. He's also the voice of Iron Man in the Avengers cartoons. So he's well-versed in the superhero TV realm. And I loved the verbal and intellectual sparring matches between him and Lena. I thought that was fantastic. And he's sort of this show's iteration of Lex Luthor. And how he was behind the whole, basically, you know, with the sub and the sort of interrupting the commemorative ceremony for Supergirl. The fact that he was the man behind the curtain and orchestrating all that was fascinating to me. And I really liked there was a scene at the end where Lena was telling, you know, was having a conversation with him. And then Supergirl comes in and says, "Are you finished with him?" And then before she basically takes him and sort of basically tells him that she knows what he's been up to, that whole segment reminded me of the premiere episode of Lois and Clark way back when, because at the end, Superman and Lex had a similar moment where he was hovering outside the window and he told Lex that he knew that he wasn't who he claimed to be and that he would have his eye on him. So it was a nice parallel to that.
That happened also in Superman the Animated Series, I believe.
Yeah, it's a recurring thing in Superman media that they always try. It's like one of those touchstone moments that it seems like every interpretation of the character has to hit, and this show did it as well. And I actually really enjoyed that scene. I'm glad that Lena is going to be getting a more expanded role this season, because I actually really loved her character in the previous season. She was one of my standouts of last season, so I'm looking forward to more of her. And I like that she bought Cat Call, because I just don't see Jimmy Olsen in that leadership role. I just don't. In fact, this episode, he was in it, but he was non-existent. I think that character, I think, I want more from him in the sense that I think the whole, like, the whole Guardian angle is forced. And it seems to me that the writers really don't know what to do with him, which is a shame because I like McCad Brooks a lot. And so I'm hoping they find some sort of balance, because what I saw of him in the premiere was wasted. And I really wasn't digging the John Diggle / poor man's Batman version of Guardian that they had him, that they had going on last year. So I'm hoping they can give him something, you know, something a little bit more meaty to do this season, and something that doesn't seem forced. The brief introduction we had of Rain, I loved it. I thought, because you see her, she's lifting the, what was it, the scaffolding or whatever it was that fell on her daughter. And it's like, the way they played it off was cool, because you think, like us as you know, that we know sort of, that we follow the news, we know that she has a bigger role to play and she's sort of the quote-unquote best guy of the season. So we know that, you know, that she's the one, that she's got some kind of power. But the way they played off that scene, it could be played off to the casual viewer that doesn't know any better, that she just had a momentary burst of, you know when they say when you're in trouble or your kid's in trouble, sometimes parents have momentary bursts of, you know, almost, I don't know what it is, adrenaline that makes them seem like they can do the impossible. It felt like they were playing it off as like, look, it could be this, but people who know more of the news and the behind the scenes stuff will know who she is. I thought the way they did that was really well done. And I loved seeing Erica Durant as Allura in those dream sequences. Those, especially because, you know, they had, it was like the fields, the cornfields, and kind of thing. Those, obviously, because Erica Durant, so obviously, really gave me the Smallville vibe. So I was with you there, Jordan. But overall, I really enjoyed the episode. It's a good start. And let's see where they go next. And I'm not going to give away which one was my favorite premiere of the season just yet. I'm going to say that till the end of the show, and we're all going to do that at the end of the show. We're going to say which our favorite was. We're going to sort of kind of put them in an order of what our favorite was and what our least favorite was and whatnot. But I think we can move on.
One more thing I wanted to point out that I forgot to mention about premiere was the scene where she lifted up the submarine.
Right.
Can I just say that Blake Neely's score during that scene was phenomenal? Like, that was so, I mean, it was like really like, I thought that scene was like so powerful, largely in part because of his score. Like, it was just, I was like pumping my fist during that scene. It was like awesome.
And also, now that you mentioned it, and Jasmine, let me know if you noticed this as well. There were scenes where, you know, at the very beginning when she's hovering over, you know, up above in the sky and she's listening. That was literally, like, it reminded me of the scene in Superman Returns when he did that. And I kept saying to myself, look, this show's probably got a budget of what, $3 million?
It fluctuated. I feel like it was that way in season one when it was on CBS, but they had to lower production costs by moving it to the CW in Vancouver. Right, so
let's say between 1.5 and 3, that's just a rounded average.
Yeah.
And that scene looked better than the scene in Superman Returns.
I can understand why, because, I mean, Jordan brought up a good point. The way they scored it, you can see her resolution of her still fighting when she got that submarine out of there, because she had been in such despair that whole episode.
Yeah.
And that, to the point where even though she was drowning, it wasn't like she wanted to drown. She had almost lost the will to fight a bit until Mon-El was able to jerk her awake and jumpstart her brain to recognize, no, keep going. And by the time she lifted that submarine at the end, you can really feel, you felt her struggle, but you felt sort of her triumph over her own despair a bit. Mm-hmm. And even at the beginning, when you saw her hovering, you're right, in that Superman Return, you can see his blind 100% focus, or her blind 100% focus of just wanting to be the best Supergirl she could, like denying whatever else she could be doing to really deal with her issues, mostly because even in Superman Returns, he was kind of trying to avoid dealing with the fact that he left Lois, and now she has a kid and is with somebody else in that realm. So they both were in that moment kind of fighting against their more human, romantic, love interest instincts, hers of despair, his of indecision, and they both tunneled that into being a great hero. But the one thing we all know about Superman and Supergirl is what makes them the greatest hero is always their heart behind it. Mm-hmm. And you can't really ever get rid of Clark, and you can't really ever get rid of Kara, because of how that is themselves sometimes in their most basis of without powers, without accolades, when they're in the most basic relating with humans is sometimes when you see them shine, because you recognize they don't have to put on a pretense, they don't have to try or convince or save, they're just being themselves. And both in those two instances, they were fighting against that, but you can also see that when they embraced it, how it really made them more well-rounded, and you can really see how stronger it made them in the end.
Yeah, so I mean, the parallel was great, but also it just amazes me that the visuals on this show, it probably had more money, like you said, when it was at CBS, and yet it looks better now.
Okay, to be fair, though, Superman Returns was 11 years ago, so technically...
Okay, yeah, fair enough, but to counter that, Bryan Singer had $206 million at his disposal.
He has a point, because I mean, I would actually, I work in animation and 3D modeling and within that industry in actuality. That's what I went to school for. I went to art school for animation and media. Okay. So I know and you're right. Having a budget that big, even back in that day, should have given some visually stunning scenes. And Superman
Returns. There were some, yes, for sure. No question about it.
Yeah. But I just like from what. And I think it really is a testament. They said this actually back when The Flash was first premiering, that there are things that you can do on TV now that would take that used to take a movie budget to do then. Yeah. Because you have people didn't either have the skill set or the time to put in it. But because technology has progressed so much now, you can do more things on a TV budget, on the TV Flash, than you can ever have done on the 90s Flash because of the way that our technology has progressed.
So yeah, there were just two things I noticed in terms of the episode that I thought that thankfully you reminded me when you brought up your thing that I could double back and mention. But since Jasmine mentioned The Flash, that's a good segue. So let's talk about the premiere of The Flash. Since I went to Jasmine first last time around, let's go to Jordan first. What did you think of The Flash?
I liked this premiere. I didn't love it, but I certainly liked it. At the beginning, my thoughts the whole time were, man, the Star Lab feels empty. Like, I missed Barry, I missed Caitlin, and I missed HR especially. Like, I was like, the place just felt so empty. And it was, I at the same time, even though I felt that way, and I think this sort of alludes to something you brought up, Adam, actually back when we were talking about Supergirl, because you teased it about when we were going to talk about The Flash, it bothered me how fast Barry came back, because I wasn't sure that we were actually going to get this much, but I really would have loved if we got a few episodes of Wally being the main protector of Central City. I feel like it was rushed to get Barry back that quickly, and it took away some of the... I know that within the show's timeline it had been longer, but to get it within the course of one episode of him coming back from the Speed Force, I think it took away some of the impact of the sacrifice that he made at the end of season three. So that sort of rubbed me the wrong way. But I thought that there was some other really cool stuff in the episode in terms of what we did see of Wally. And I thought it was really cool the scene where we saw him actually put on Barry's suit. I really liked that scene. I thought that it was cool with the Samuroid. I feel like that's one of the most comic accurate costumes that we've ever seen, and I thought that was really cool. He's sort of a goofy villain, but I think it was really cool how comic accurate they made him. I don't even know whether I should call him a villain at this point, since he is just a robot, but you know what I'm trying to say here.
Right.
I thought it was cool what we saw of Caitlyn. I'm really, really intrigued by the tease that we got of her at the end. And I'm like, I'm really curious to see where they're going with her this season in terms of her powers and whether she's going to keep working with Team Flash or whether she's not going to keep working with Team Flash. I thought that was really, really, really interesting. And it has me excited to see what they do next. Once Barry came back, even though I did feel it was a little bit rushed, I thought that Grant Gustin just did a fantastic job playing Barry as he was like sort of out of his mind, and I thought that that was really, really well done on Grant Gustin's part. And I also really dug the tease of the Thinker at the end, and I really thought that that was exciting to get our first look at our, just like on Supergirl, I talked about how much I liked our first tease of Rain. I probably didn't like our first tease of Thinker as much as I liked our first tease of Rain, but I still really liked it a lot as well. And I thought he looked really cool, and I'm really excited to see a non-speedster villain as the big bad this season. So I thought that that was awesome. Yeah, how about you guys?
Jasmine, what did you think?
I, with this premiere, I think I liked it more than I anticipated, but there are definitely some rooms to grow. Like Jordan, Barry came back really fast, but my issue with the fact that when he came back is the fact that we had this whole issue of him being sucked into the Speed Force last season because he had to take somebody's place and serve his penance. And while I understand they wanted to make to bring Barry back like he had served it, depending on how long he had actually been in the Speed Force, according to him. Like, I feel like the Speed Force is supposed to be a representation of our universe's energy, and Barry goes missing. It's like, the fact that there were no consequences and no one took his place, or they weren't able to find a way to, like, fix that or address that, at least the fact that, hey, we're really defying what the Speed Force told us the last time we were in this situation, and you're just going to say, okay, we can let him go now? Like, they could have let him go before. He didn't have to get locked up. So that I felt was some logical things that I felt like could have been addressed. I really did love Iris really stepping up. I feel like Iris as a character sometimes suffers the concept of just being the love interest because the girl's supposed to be smart. She had a dissertation to write in our first season. She became a reporter not just because of her connections, but eventually because of her skill. And then so often she was just kind of in the background, just almost giving moral support. And then there was last season where everyone was just trying to save her, and she was struggling with her own depression and feelings about it. But I just really wanted her to see her step up. And, of course, with Caitlyn kind of gone, the only bit of girl power we had at that point was basically Iris. And I really loved how she stepped into that set. And I understood her emotional battle of wanting to honor Barry's wishes and keep going. Don't let the memory of him drag her down. But at the same time, still missing him enough. I felt like in her mind, she wanted them to succeed, but she couldn't suffer the guilt of them failing. So she didn't want to give in to hope in the fact that they could. And I understood that really on an emotional level. I love the fact that Cisco and even Wally Cisco was really stepped into his vibe powers, which is really great because he's now actively out there in the field more frequently now rather than just every once in a while. I hope they keep that up going forward. And even with the Thinker, I feel like Demon Arrow this year is kind of doing that same thing where their big bad is different than their big bad normally was, with Michael Emerson not being like very physically opposing but more intelligent on Arrow. Here we have someone that's not a speedster, but it's still a very valuable threat, or at least he will become one even more so as we see more of his powers on the actual show. So it's like a little tease there. So, but like Jordan said, I am very interested in not having a speedster be his villain, because only so many times he can say he's the fastest man alive and then meet somebody faster to the point where we're like, are you really the fastest man alive? Because for three seasons, that title sequence is basically a lie until we met basically Savitar. So, but I will give credit to Grant Gustin as an actor. Those scenes where he was basically out of his mind and you really did feel the emotional turmoil his friends went through trying to reach him and realizing how far gone he was very poignant as a performance. And then that final scene where he recognized it clicked in his brain that Iris was going to die, he broke out of the containment. No one else has ever broken out by brute force alone. And it really did kind of reinforce the whole West Allen love story there. That is supposed to, that is the main love story of our show, of how much he would be willing to do for her and how much more powerful he has gotten by sucking up the Speed Force energy while trapped in there. So I would say that and also for Caitlin, I want to get her. I like Caitlin and I like Killer Frost as a character, but it was almost like she left last season. Because most of her last season was struggle with her Killer Frost and Caitlin persona. And she kind of became Killer Frost. And then by the time we saw her this time, we thought she had made progress. Or at least it had gone. And then we pick up the season and recognize she's in the exact same place. So I feel like a lot of people progressed, but I just feel like they just kind of didn't know what to do with Caitlin then. And then they kind of had to put her as a bartender, because every female at some point on The Flash has to be a bartender or a barista at some point in time. So I wish for Caitlin they could have found a better way to represent her struggle, or maybe just a better storyline for her than just basically being the exact same as it was before. But all in all, I feel like it has the potential to grow and be a star. I liked it better than I thought, but I do recognize there's still some improvements to be made.
Yeah, I'm going to echo what everybody said about Barry coming back way too fast. I mean, it was just, it really annoyed me because they made such a big deal at the end of last season that he had to go in and you know, sort of sustain and fix the Speed Force. And you thought that was going to be a big thing. And like you said, Jordan, I would have liked at least two episodes of Wally being the main protector, the main Flash. And it would have been cool to see something of what was going on in the Speed Force, like what was happening to Barry. That would have been a cool way to go. But instead, they did exactly what they did last year with Flashpoint, which was that Flashpoint storyline was a bastardization of the concept of Flashpoint. It was ridiculous, and it was a big letdown when he came back so early. And not only that, the fact that Cisco was like all of a sudden, oh yeah, I've been working on this, and it was like his reasoning was, well, I just missed my friend. It's like, okay, but yeah, but we're dealing with some earth shattering shit happening here with the Speed Force, and you know, you can just. The way they brought him back, to me, it was all a little bit of a cop-out. Whereas, you know, I watch Supernatural, and sometimes on that show what they do is whatever cliffhanger they leave you with at the end of the season, they pick up and carry forward for a portion of the next season. I wish The Flash would start doing that. Unfortunately, it hasn't. I think Jasmine was right about what she said about Iris in the sense that last season, it was hard to watch with her, for me. And so, I was really glad that they gave her more to do. And like you said, she really stepped up. I love that aspect of it. What else can I say? In terms of the, what was he called? The Samuroid? Is that what it was? Is that?
The Samuroid, I think.
Is that what it was called?
I think so.
Yeah, it was the Samuroid.
Yeah, I think you're right in saying that that was, you know, a very, would you say it was a very literal interpretation of the comic book?
Yeah.
I agree with you, but I also think you can say the same thing for what the show has done with Gorilla Grodd and King Shark. So, it's on par with how they were faithful to those characters as well. I like Cisco at the same point, even though I don't like the reasoning why he brought him back and how quick it was. I do like him getting more involved with his vibe powers. They started to do that last season, and I hope that continues. Because he's one of my favorite characters on the show. I do miss, I gotta say, you could, for me, the lack of the Harrison Wells, Tom Cavanaugh, was apparent here. The show really misses him when he's not around, in my opinion. And I like, again, Caitlin does seem stagnant, but I do like the route they're taking, the Killer Frost, and they're kind of playing with the Bruce Banner, Incredible Hulk concept. And so I enjoyed that. And now the big question I have is, okay, she may have started in the same place, but let's progress her going forward. That to me is going to be the key, because it's not so much where you start them at the beginning of the season is the setup, but how it ultimately pays off will determine whether what they've done is a success or not. But like I said, to me, and I'll kind of spoil it right now, this was the weakest of the premieres for me.
I agree.
I was honestly severely disappointed in that. I expect more from The Flash. And I think I didn't love every decision they made last year, but I think I liked that season more than most did. So for me, this was a severe disappointment. But that's all I got to say on The Flash. Anybody else have anything final they want to add on Flash?
I would say that season three, I didn't like as much, mostly because I felt like it didn't feel like it wrapped up. It wrapped up well, but getting to that point just felt really like a slugfest. In their mind, they were probably trying to move more quickly to get back to some action, more sequences with Barry. But really, one of the reasons I want to say they probably didn't progress Wally as being the Flash more than a few days, because if they would have had him showing him succeeded, it could have undermined Barry's need to be the Flash himself. Because this is still Barry's origin story. It's supposed to be his ascent into being the Flash of the comics, which is so powerful and such a poignant superhero. And this is also sort of Wally's and Vibes and Killer Frost's and everyone's. But if you move Wally into that place too quickly, and he actually does well, because Wally is actually really smart within his own self. He was creating trying to create his own technology while he was in college before he actually got his powers. But if you progress him that way, you really do start undermining your main character. And I think they recognize that, which is, I think, one of the reasons they didn't progress him as much. Now, this is not me saying I support that decision, because I would love Wally to step up. He's trained and is hard, and he still has that boy unit, that fresh sort of wonder of the world of, I can do it, I'm going to try harder, I still have faith in the world. And I do like that about his character. So I agree that I wish I would have seen him more, but I also know probably why they didn't. Mostly because some people really did struggle with Barry's decision making last year, because Flashpoint for me was just like it's sort of like this season, it's like it just felt too rushed. But I also feel like that is the side effect of having multi-universes connected. You couldn't have had it be the same that long without it affecting other shows, and the people don't want it to affect other shows. And so they end up having to progress it faster and having to look at Barry make mistake after mistake after mistake. And a lot of people struggled with Barry last year because of how many mistakes and he did. And when you put somebody else in his place and they do well, people are going to start feeling even more undermining confidence in Barry's ability. So I do think that may be one of the reasons it didn't stay as long as it should have.
Could be. We'll ultimately never know unless they come out and tell us. But I will say that I did like that the third act battle between him and the samurai. I thought that was really well. Again, across all four shows, with Arrow it's more fight choreography, but across the other three shows, the visual effects are just phenomenal. And that sequence at the end with samurai was no different. So well done on that. I know I was a little bit down on, I was a little bit negative about this one, so I'll end off on a extra positive note. Let's transition over to Legends of Tomorrow. Jasmine, what'd you think of that one?
Okay, Legends is of the four, I'm going to say, honestly, it is my least favorite. It does have its moments, but I struggle logically looking at this show, because the only way I really can take it to really watch it is that I literally feel like I have to turn off my brain, because if you think too hard about Legends, you're going to sit there and you're going to pick apart everything they do in the show. So you do have to suspend a good amount of disbelief. But for the premiere, I think I struggled with this premiere mostly because every critique they gave them of why they shouldn't be time travelers were legitimate reasons why they should never be time travelers. And so it came to be like by the time they ended and they gave them the shit back, that you started being like, well, at least I did. I was just like, but they didn't improve at all. Like, they did all of this to prove they could still be time travelers and make a difference. But nothing they did actually helped. In fact, it only made it worse. And yet we're still going to reward them just because they have gumption. So that was one of my things. And then the fact that everybody kind of, I mean, it was interesting that even the characters that came from other shows didn't quite go back to them. Like, I thought Jax would end up kind of having the cameo with Wally a bit more, but that didn't happen. It was Captain Steel. And then there was Ray, who worked at like an app company, because, and they did this, and I'm a little bit salty about it, but they had, like, you had a girl run your company to the ground. It's like, I kind of feel some type of way about that statement, but I'm going to let it go. So, but the fact that Ray, even not having his own tech company, he's supposed to have a 140 IQ, as we learned in season 3 of Arrow, and the fact that he's reduced to this. Did he have, like, no stock in the company? Didn't have no resources to push him through? It really just kind of shows a little bit more how they're more of how, I guess the show was want to show how they're more of a failure than we think. And so they kind of need time travelers to actually feel purpose about their life. Because, I mean, that was the reason that Rip got them in episode 1 of the series, which is the fact that the only reason I was really able to get you wasn't because you're actual legends, was because if I took you, the world wouldn't suffer anything because you're basically useless. So they tried to have to prove themselves. And even Sarah basically working at a pseudo Bed Bath & Beyond, I'm like, I mean, it just really felt, I don't know, I didn't idealize with how lack of a purpose they had without. I mean, I guess it kind of helped them come back together as a team, but it just really felt like, what would y'all do if y'all were superheroes, but your life really suck this much? So the premiere just kind of, I struggled with that one a bit, because they kind of kept giving us all these reasons why they shouldn't be time travelers, and then they proved themselves, and then they kind of still kept going, and I was like, I don't kind of see a purpose.
I, on the other hand, really, really love this one, just because you're right. There is an element of this show where you do have to turn off your brain and just have fun with it. It doesn't take itself overly seriously. And that's when you're coming off of something like The Flash, which last year, the time travel and all that made my head hurt. The Savitar stuff. And then when you're coming off Arrow, which is a lot darker and deeper, there, you know, and Supergirl has, you know, it has its own thing where it makes you, you know, it's lighter, but it still takes itself more seriously. I personally like having that one show where I can just turn off my brain and have fun. And I think showing them as being screw ups and sort of needing the Wave Rider and to be time traveling superheroes, that brings it back to the whole, like you were saying, that's the only reason Rip Hunter was able to go pull them out of time and use them, because, you know, they do have really nothing going for them. So I thought it echoed what Rip was saying in the premiere. I my favorite character on the series still remains, well, I don't know, favorite character, but he always delivers my favorite moments, is Heatwave, McRory. I mean, he's just a riot, and I honestly find myself laughing every time he's on screen. I get what you're saying with the Felicity Ray Palmer thing. I totally get that. But the cool scene that I liked was Sarah when she was at that Bed Bath & Beyond knockoff. Because I think everybody's had that flash in their head of like this annoying boss that you know that you just really want to take out, like in your head if you could, you know. So I thought that was, you know, that was cool. I had fun with that. But overall, like I said, you don't have to think too much. There was that emotional beat with Jefferson and Martin Stein that I really enjoyed. That was one of my favorite moments, period, of the episode, and it had no special effects whatsoever. And I get the whole thing about Rip kind of playing the hard ass and the sort of bureaucratic sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? The company man, but then deep down he really wants to, you know, give him that opportunity again, and he sort of like lets things slide with them, and I get that he would have that reaction to them because of their relationship that built up over the first two seasons. So I just like the sort of mindless fun aspect of it. I think it's a change of pace from the other three shows, and for me personally, I like that it's a little different than the other shows. Jordan, what did you think?
I would agree with you guys in that I Legends is sort of the show where I turn my brain off a little bit typically. It is typically my least favorite of the four shows, and that's not to say I don't like it, but I just don't have the emotional investment in it that I have in the other shows most of the time. However, I think largely because of that, actually, I was incredibly pleasantly surprised by this premiere. I mean, I loved this premiere. I thought it was excellent. I thought it was hilarious. I loved seeing all the Legends, sort of seeing what they were up to when they're not time traveling, particularly Heatwave chilling out in Aruba and picking up STDs. I thought that was hilarious. And I also loved seeing Sarah, as you brought up, Adam, seeing her, because it's like it's such – I mean, she's a trained assassin, and she's working at Bed Bath & Beyond, and it's like – I felt like that was just there was such a juxtaposition there that I thought really, really was funny, and seeing her her interactions with her boss were really funny, as you pointed out, Adam. I certainly agree with that, and I personally also liked seeing Ray I liked seeing what he was up to as well. I liked that he was sort of this working at this what was it? It was like Tinder, but it wasn't Tinder. Yeah. Yeah, that was funny to me as well. Also, I really want to point out the Kid Flash cameo we got in this episode was awesome. I know I complained a little bit about the Flash about not getting to see enough of Wally being the main protector of Central City, but we got to see a little bit of it in Legends. So, I mean, it still doesn't completely make up for the how they rush things in the Flash, but it's good to get that little bit in Legends as well. I'm going to make my Smallville mention here. Adam, Hiro Kanagawa, he was in this episode. He was Principal Kwan on Smallville, so it was awesome to see him return to the DC Universe. This is actually not the first time he's returned to the DC Universe since Smallville, but it was nice to see him do it once again here on Legend of Tomorrow. That was cool to see. I liked the stuff with Julius Caesar, and especially with him and Mick, and I thought that was. And I love the scene where they picked up the wrong guy, the guy who was just dressed up like Julius Caesar, and they picked him. Like, there were just so many funny moments in this episode. Also, Sarah's fight with Julius Caesar, I really enjoyed it. And just a really, like, this is just the show where I sit back and I just have a lot of fun with it. And I think that this episode really leaned into the strengths of Legends of Tomorrow. And it was just I just had a blast with this episode.
And I thought for me, Jordan, the cool thing was. They show that the Legends are screw ups, which we've known from pretty much day one. But at the same time, the official, you know, government sanctioned organization wasn't much better because they got the wrong guy and they couldn't get the job done either. So I mean, it's just, you know, it's there's there's that aspect of it too. But one thing I did miss that I want to mention, the ending with Vixen.
Yes.
I love that. First of all, I love that character. I love that they brought her on in season two. And I will say that I like this iteration of Vixen more than the one that appeared on Arrow, which is the granddaughter, I believe, correct?
The one who appeared on Arrow is the granddaughter of this one, yes.
Okay, well, I like this one. I think this one is it's a much bigger sample size. But yeah. I think it's handled better, it's written better, her character. And so I'm really glad that we got that tease at the end with her and the sort of visual expression of her powers. I really want more with her in the season. That's my wish for the season.
I think, Adam, that's how they're going to bring in Constantine, is because you saw how Vixen was like, she was sort of out of control with her powers in that last scene. I think I think Constantine, his two appearances this season are going to tie into that, is my guess.
Could very well be.
I always look at Amaya's being there, because I love her as a person, because she always seems to be the most logical among them. So Amaya sometimes thinks like me in the fact that she points things out when I'm just like, thank you, someone said it. So I agree with the fact of wanting to have her both. But at the same time, I struggle because I understand that I love Amaya more because I've had more time with her, but I do still like the original Vixen that we have. So the issue here is like, how do we get more of Amaya without jeopardizing her lineage going forward, even with her relationship with Captain Steel? So I feel like the way they did it last season, they were basically like, F time, I don't care about it, I'm just going to be with you. But I guess that's, in picking up your other point, Adam, like, versus the government is sanctioned time travelers versus like the ragtag team, they're both non-perfect, but there are some things that each get right.
Yeah.
Like, so it's like the government team has a lot more efficiency. They do recognize that a little bit of that detachment and that efficiency to be able to, handle things the way they need to get things done appropriately. But they're not necessarily, as we found on the premiere, very field trained, because they never actually sometimes been in the field to have to actually fight outside of a couple characters that we saw. So you do see that going back and forth. But in terms of Amaya, they were correct in the fact that Amaya eventually needs to go back to her hometown, so her own village, to have her lineage go forward, because I don't know how that's going to affect the timeline going forward if she's not there. Because, I mean, our Vixen now ends up saving Detroit, according to her series. She's very important to the timeline, so she kind of needs to exist. So we can't always just be like, F time, I'm going to do what I want. But at the same time, I do still love her character so much, while at the same time, I am looking forward to the Middle East, the Muslim character that they're going to bring forward.
The ISIS character, yeah, that's right.
Yes, I'm looking forward to seeing what they're going to do with her. I've seen a few glimpses of her, of the actor out there, so I know she's going to be playing a part soon, and I'm really looking forward to her. A little bit more girl power on the team to even things out in general, but I still enjoy Amaya, and I'm wondering how all these people are going to, because if we're losing Martin Stein, but we're also getting Yes's character, and we're Mitch matching people, that technically is what Legends is about anyway. So I am seeing how this soup is going to turn out at the end.
Anything else you want to add, Jordan, or we'll move on to Arrow?
I just really had one more thing, which is that they got some new contraptions at the end, like the Men in Black thing, where they could erase. and I think it'll be cool to see how they employ those into use this season, because with the Legends, I was about to say they would put them into good use, but that's probably not the best way to put it. Knowing the Legends, they'll probably put them into interesting use would be the better way to say it.
And it'll be interesting, because I think we're gonna get a hybrid of both. Like you said, both teams have their strengths, the government sanctioned one and the Legends, or Jasmine said that, excuse me. And I think we're definitely going to see, you know, Rip is going to obviously play a role in this series because he's still part of the cast. And I think they're going to add, we're going to see more than we think of the of her second in command, whatever her name was, his second in command, the one that had that animosity with Sarah. I think we're going to see more of that play out as well. So I think those dynamics will be interesting as well to watch play out.
Definitely.
And let's wrap premiere week up with Arrow. Jordan, what did you think of Arrow?
Oh boy, I really liked this premiere. I had some issues with it that kept me from loving it. I really wanted to love it because Arrow is my favorite of these shows. I didn't quite love this premiere, so just a tease for later. I don't think this was my favorite premiere of the week, which is very surprising because Arrow is almost always my favorite episode of the week. But that's not to say it wasn't really good, because I did think it was really good. I'll talk about a little bit of the negatives first, just so I can end on a positive note. I guess my biggest negatives here was that it felt like they were repeating themselves a lot. And what I mean by that, there's really three specific instances that I feel like they're repeating themselves with, that it's just like it feels repetitive to me. One is Quentin and the whole thing with whether he was going to relapse or not and whether he was going to start drinking again. It's like we've done that so many times in the show, and I was like, come on, let's not do that again. The other thing was Diggle with his sort of PTSD, and it was like we already saw that after he killed Andy in season four, so it was like I'm not sure I really want to see that again. And the third is Oliver being outed as the Green Arrow. And it's like, we've seen that twice now, basically, which was in season one and then also again in season three. So I'm not sure I want to see this storyline again. And then you could argue we saw it a little bit in season five as well with Susan. So I'm not sure I want to see that again. But, you know, those didn't ruin the episode for me. It just feels a little bit repetitive. But maybe you can do some unique things with these this time around that they didn't do last time. But in terms of the other stuff in this episode, I really, really enjoyed it. I liked how the flashback, obviously we don't have the island flashbacks anymore. Well, technically they are still
island flashbacks. They're
technically island flashbacks, I should say, but they're not part of the five-year thing that we had before.
Right.
But it was cool to see, first of all, it was really surprising to me that we saw everybody right from the start, and we saw exactly who was, or not everybody, but almost everybody, exactly who had made it off, certain people that had made it off. And I was like, wow, they're really throwing everybody at us right now. That was really surprising to me. Again, almost everybody. There was a few exceptions, and I'll get into that, I'm sure, in a second. But I really liked how they sort of spaced it out with the island flashbacks, so you saw how these things played out. I particularly really liked the stuff, everything with Slade in this episode, both in the flashbacks and in present day. I really loved. He is the best character in the entire Arrowverse, in my opinion, and I can't say enough. I've said it so many times on Twitter, talking to people, how good it is to have him back on the show at the end of season five, and now having him back in season six. His dynamic with Oliver is just incredible. And I really loved seeing that this episode, both in the flashbacks and also in present. In the scene, and I guess I'll talk about this now, where we saw Thea, and we see that she's in a, and presumably based on the news we got that we talked about at the top of this episode, I don't think that's going to last particularly long, but it was really an emotional scene. Slade in that scene, I really liked it, how talked with Oliver in that scene, and I really enjoyed that. I want to talk about the new costumes for a second in this episode. Obviously, we already seen it in a promo picture, which is Dinah's new costume, which just looks phenomenal. I'm so happy to see her really step into the role of Black Canary now. It's just awesome. I also love, this was something I was hoping for more of last season. We're finally getting it, is her in her day job at the SCPD. I think that's awesome. We saw it right from the beginning of this episode. I really enjoyed that. We got two rematches of her versus Black Siren, which was a lot of fun as well, because we got, I felt like it was a little bit, I would have liked their fight to last a little bit longer in the season five finale. I was glad that we got two actually rematches of the two of them this episode. And it's nice to see Black Siren, because before we'd seen her more as a pawn, first as of Zoom and then of Prometheus. It's nice to see her as her own villain now, which I really, I thought I really enjoyed that. I really liked Wild Dog's new costume. It's not as comic accurate as his first costume. on the show, but I think it looks really cool, actually. I also really liked the scene Oliver had with Wild Dog, where he gave him the chance to get a second hearing to regain custody of his daughter, because Wild Dog is a character who really endeared, but that was a really interesting storyline and a really heartwarming storyline as well. So that's something I'm hoping to see sort of carry forward this season and see that progress. So I guess that's about all my thoughts on the premiere that I can think of right now. So I'll pass it on to who's next.
Cool. Jasmine, what did you think of Arrow?
I actually really liked this premiere because it felt settled to me in some ways. Like, I felt like Oliver had really come into a mature place. He was really mentoring. He was giving Quentin advice about the fact that this is not your daughter. This is Black Siren from another universe. He helped Renee out with getting a custody hearing as Jordan brought to the light. He was even mature in his dealings with Felicity. They wasn't beating around the bush. He was direct. In each scene that I think he had with William, the scene where he was the bad man and the scene at the end where he told him I'm your dad. The way this works is I'm your dad. I'm going to be there for you, whether you like it or not. And there's nothing you're going to be able to do to make me give up on you. I felt like we really are seeing a settled, mature Oliver, which is, I think, very different than the Olivers we've had in the past, because he's had mature moments, but then he's had moments where he royally effed up. And I'm not saying he's not going to go through his own struggles going forward in this season, but it's very nice after 5 seasons to feel like you've earned a sort of like logic to how things should go. And the fact that he really could feel like he stepped into his superhero shoes now. I really do feel like almost everyone in this show had at least a little bit to shine. As far as Black Siren and Black Canary, they did have 2 very interesting fight scenes. I do enjoy Dinah at the Black Canary. She is my favorite Black Canary, in my opinion. I really like her maturity in herself. And it's very interesting that they paired her more off with Diggle this episode than they did with Curtis and Renee. Because before, that's where most of her scenes were, because she was like a newbie like they are. But I wanted to say one of the reasons they probably did that was because as far as similar mindsets and maturity are, she is best at Diggle's wavelength. Because when she's paired with Renee and Wild Dog, it's almost like she's like the big sister, the younger brothers that are just like getting into trouble all the time. So that's and that maturity is one of the really things that I really like about the way Juliana plays the character. She plays her as kind of coming to her own because she's a detective. She's been out here fighting for the lesser man, fighting for good before in her own ways. And she really is a confident and sure of herself sort of character, and I enjoy that about her. I want to say, as far as Felicity is concerned, I think, first of all, in a more vain perspective, that she looked amazing this whole episode. On a personal note, I loved everything that she wore. And then on a more intelligent note, I'm really looking forward to her coming into her own sort of company storyline going down the road. I know they teased that over the break because she's very intuitive. She's so smart and intelligent within her own mind. And despite that, there have been ups and downs with characters and plot lines over the seasons. I feel like if anybody should between her and Curtis, but even just by herself in general, has the intelligence to be able to start something morally and logistically, she could very well pull that off. And I feel like she's earned the right to have her own storyline. I feel like a lot of the critiques and things people go through over issues, because most of the time they kind of pair her off with whoever the main love interest or Oliver or some sort of whether it was Ray in season 3, Oliver's going forward. One of the reasons things I really liked about her in season 5 was the fact that she paired off with Helix. She really got to explore a world that the others weren't in, and we really got to see her brains and everything come to the forefront, her own ingenuity. And that is something I want more for her character, instead of her always being paired with someone else's to prop up someone else's storyline, which I think they do a lot, because I joke around, I call her like superhero catnip, because she's almost been avoided in just about every superhero's origin story. And at the same time, she's not sometimes given the credit that she do on her own merit. So I'm looking forward to where she's going on further in there. Is touching off what Renee said about Rusaka's storyline, I do feel like that was something that her Oliver almost getting his identity revealed has happened almost three times at this point. So I think one of the biggest critiques I normally have about Arrow in general is that they really do some of the same things over and over again, but they like to present it as if it's something, oh my God, it is so dynamic, it's so great. And I was like, if you just think about this for 2 seconds, you realize you did the exact same thing like two seasons ago. A lot of the issues that we even went through in season five were hashed out in season three and going forward. So it was like, they do recycle a bit much, but other with that, I think one of my favorite scenes actually, and I am enjoying, even though Diggle's PTSD in a way of dealing, have always having butting heads with Oliver or regarding his brother, his wife, one of my favorite scenes this premiere was when he was trapped down in the bunker when Black Siren broke in. And I remember sitting there being like, they actually gave Diggle a few moments before the team got there to really hold his own. And I was very impressed by that moment because a lot of times Diggle is very great by himself. He's a war veteran. He's special ops and all of these things, but he doesn't have as much time to shine by himself. And so that was actually one of the highlights for me, this premiere, those few moments where he really got to take some names by himself and show why when Oliver is not there, he is now second in command because he can hold his own by his own. And so I really enjoyed that. I enjoyed the maturity aspect of it. I enjoyed the potential going forward. I don't know how much more we'll see of Black Siren going forward. I'm not necessarily the most unhappy about that because I go through my own issues when it comes to like having things stick and the fact that even though she's a Earth 2 doppelganger, they're kind of still toying around the fact that she's still here, even though in the show multiple times they told us this wasn't the original Laurel, and Quentin is struggling with that. From a parent perspective, I understand that. And I understand Jordan's critique about doing acolytism in there. I think for this time, he didn't revert to it, which I thought was interesting. They toy with the fact that he may, because he struggled with it a lot, but I don't think he actually did go back into it. It was just something that he was seriously contemplating because the guilt was starting to eat him alive. And that was, again, something that I felt like Oliver came in, was able to basically sit there and talk to him, tell him, hey, you did the right thing. You were protecting a friend and all of that going in. And even back in the momentary flashbacks on the island, and going through that, reassuring William when he was trying to find his mom, even though ultimately we know what happened there, and then looking for Thea, I feel like Oliver really shined this episode as a character, which is sometimes I don't think you can always say, because our main character, as we know, if you're a really big fan of Arrow, is very flawed. He doesn't always make the right decisions, but this Oliver that we're seeing so far does feel like someone I can really relate and root to.
Yeah, for me, I really love this premiere. yes, they did tread on some, you know, old ground, but I think, you know, in the case of the only real super negative I have is there was no real mystery about who survived and who didn't, and that was a little bit. I mean, I know most of them are series regulars, the ones that, you know, all the ones that survived are series regulars. But I think they could have played with that, or at least made us wonder just a little bit longer. I think when you have a big, pun intended, explosive ending like last season, you want to stretch that out a little bit more than they did. I'm not saying multi-episode, I'm just saying within the episode. I did love the scenes between Oliver and William. And what I liked about it was that there was a progression. It wasn't just, all right, I'm your father now, and everybody's going to go, you know, roast marshmallows and sing Kumbaya by a fire. I like that there was, you know, it's a constant evolving thing. And there is both characters getting used to each other and sort of coming to terms with their new situation. So I like that they didn't pull a Flash and rush into or out of something right away. So I'm interested to see where that relationship goes. You made a really good point, Jasmine, about Diggle getting, you know, his time in the spotlight. And I really did like that moment. In terms of, you know, Jordan saying, well, he's going through the PTSD again. Yes, but my retort is, has he really gotten over it? I mean, there hasn't been a clear distinction of him, you know, every time they brought it up, truly, well and truly moving past it. So the fact that it's cropping up again doesn't surprise me and kind of makes a little bit of sense. With Quentin and the drinking thing, I'm more inclined to go with Jasmine and say it looked to me as if he didn't revert back. And the fact that, provided that he doesn't, like, you can show him struggling and teeter-tottering between doing it and not going back to it. But as long as the character doesn't go back to it, I think that's emphasizing a progression for the character. So I would welcome it as long as they don't have him go off on a bender again. That's my caveat for that. I really, really, in the brief time that she's been on the show, I do love Dinah and Juliana Harkavy as the Black Canary. I do love her portrayal of it, and the fact that her dual identity, like her civilian identity, yeah, working in the precinct, I think is just as cool and just as badass as her Black Canary persona. And so I think it's a very well-rounded character on both ends of the spectrum. I do like Katie Cassidy as Black Siren. I think playing the villain is something that's better suited for her. At least it seems like in the little bit we got of it last season and what we got in this premiere. And I think, as far as I know, she's going to be a series regular this season. So we're going to get more of her for sure. And I don't think the battle between Black Canary and Black Siren is over by any stretch of the imagination. And I think that the two fight scenes that we got were really well choreographed and really well done. Those really stood out to me. And the brief moments with Curtis as Mr. Terrific are some of the best we've seen to this point. Like, he's really, he's sort of been, there's been a progression with this character where he wasn't very good at the beginning, but like, he's progressed as the season went on and into the season. But we're finally starting to see the fully formed Mr. Terrific in those brief scenes at the beginning. And I just like the way they're doing it, and the fact that it's taken time, and the fact that it's taken as long as it has makes the payoff of that ever so small scene so much more worth it. Whereas I think one of the issues I've had with Arrow in the past is whether it's been with Roy or whether it's been with Thea when she first decided, okay, I want to help out Oliver. It seems like those characters would be gone for 3 weeks, and then when they come back, they're these expert fighters and they're kicking ass and they're, and I'm like, okay, that's way too quick. I'm sorry, especially for I know the fights are typically done by the stunt double, but the fact that it's supposed to be the character doing those things, for some of the characters it's happened way too fast. And so I love the fact that it's taken what's his name, Mr. Terrific or Curtis, the longest to sort of become this superhero. And I, like I said, I want to see more of him for sure. I like the character quite a bit. I also, the other thing I'll say is Wild Dog, and I'm risking talking about Wild Dog because I don't think our recorder or Skype likes Wild Dog because it was getting Jordan so much issues. But I enjoy Wild Dog, and you're right, Jordan. It really does. He really, his storyline last season really pulled at the heartstrings for me. And so to see that, to see him getting another chance with his child, I think it's It's nice. And just to expand on what you said about, you know, they've done the whole Oliver Queen exposed as Green Arrow before. They have, but in every other season, they've gave us this half-assed cop-out where, you know, he finds a way, he wiggles his way out of that scenario. What I'm hoping for is this season is they actually do something where it's not so easy for him to get out of, and they actually, the outing of him as Green Arrow tears him down, and he has to build himself back up again. I think that would be a way to do it without making it seem redundant, as if they do a quick fix and by next episode or the episode later that problem is wrapped up, then I'm going to have a problem with it. But if they do something where it takes a little longer to deal with and there are consequences to it that extend beyond, you know, just the immediate storyline, then I'll be willing to let it go. So that's where I am on that. But overall, I really, really enjoyed this premiere. Is there anything either of you want to add before we do our rankings of the premiere week?
Mostly I agree with almost all the points that you gave. I mean, even where Wild Dog's concerned, and I know I'm risking it as well, he always came up, what they would try to do with him back in the beginning of the season was made that bad boy that you kind of loved, and it didn't come off very well at the beginning. But then by the time we got scenes with Lance and with his daughter, we started recognizing the person behind, which made us kind of like him more. And so this, and I do respect the fact that he's getting another chance with his kid because of the fact that Oliver was right. Trace kind of messed that up for him. So I do think he deserves a second chance for that because, I mean, it wasn't his fault that he got kidnapped, of course. And even with Black Siren's appearance, I think that you're correct. We probably are going to see her a bit further down. As far as Katie Cassidy as an actor, I do want to say I agree with you. I like her persona of Black Siren more than I liked it the way she played Black Canary. And I think that's mostly for me an acting perspective, because the kind of sort of straight-faced way that she plays Black Siren it fits more with that character, because that character is supposed to be more menacing, supposed to be quite devious and underhanded, and the way that she pursues some of her acting choices fits more with that character. So all in all, I agree with almost everything you said there.
And the one other thing I'll mention is that, you know, with Quentin having those reactions and struggling with, you know, seeing Laurel again, his head knows that it's a different person, but, you know, his heart, as a father, I could see why he would have conflictions there, because the head and the heart are two different beasts. And so I totally get his situation and what he's feeling. I totally got that. And the other thing that I didn't mention, again, risking going back to Wild Dog talk, does his costume not look a lot like Vigilante's?
Yeah, at first I was actually quite thrown because I thought it was Vigilante and he just randomly showed up, and then I was like, wait a second, that's Renee's voice coming out of there. It really, so I agree 100%. It felt oddly similar, especially with the way they had the lighting and everything going there. I was like, who this?
Yeah, so I think maybe that's a little bit of laziness on the costuming design was part of it, but it looked eerily similar.
It was interesting how they gave us a tease of Black Canary's new suit while the series was on hiatus for the summer. But I thought it was very surprising that I appreciated that it was a surprise that we saw it in the episode. I was kind of glad that they kept it under wraps, so we just see it in the episode, and it was sort of a nice little surprise, I felt like. But
I feel like expounded on that, they would have had to continue with the concept of Renee's alive, because that was one of the critiques I would have about going into this season before the premiere. I respect a lot of writing and showrunners who, while the time know they're supposed to give us surprise input and things of that nature, they don't talk down to us. They assume we have some form of intelligence. And sometimes I feel like when you come to the point where you blow up the entire island and we're sitting there and every interview is like, oh, we don't know if Dig is alive. We don't know if Felicity is alive. We're like, stop. It's like, don't insult my intelligence. We know they're alive. We see them filming. I mean, every sort of, we're talking about their storyline. You're releasing plot lines for their storyline going forward. And you're still prefacing everything with the whole, we don't know if they're alive thing. I think that one was, it was a more of a downer for me going into the premiere. Not because I didn't know who was going to be alive. It was just more so just like, just be upfront about it. But so I do believe one of the reasons they didn't do Renee was that they would have to then have another person that they kind of had to be honest about and say, yeah, well, Renee's alive. I personally basically knew Samantha was dead because beforehand, that would be the only reason William would live with Oliver. You know Samantha had to go. Otherwise, Samantha would want her son. Everything else, I basically pictured that most everyone was going to survive, but I knew where Thea was concerned. See, Thea's the tricky one. Mark Guggenheim himself has said that there's two things he will never do while he is showrunner, and that is kill off Thea, because then Oliver would then be an orphan completely, and put Felicity in a costume, because he wants someone, at least someone on the team, without a mask. And those are the things he has sworn by no matter what. So with Thea, I knew she wasn't going to die, but they did tease that just because you did not die doesn't mean you didn't suffer a consequence of being on the island. And we see that in Dig right now, and we see that in Thea's coma. So I do think that played into the whole issue there.
Question for you guys. Who do you think it was that that sort of revived or appeared to revive Black Siren at the end of the episode in the flashbacks?
Oh, I think it's Michael Emerson's character, for sure.
And in a selfish note, that scene didn't play out well for me, mostly because it's like, were you just waiting for someone to walk up and you were just kind of playing sleep until they got close? So, so that was just a small critique for like some of the directing choices they had there, but it could have been anyone from Anatoly to Michael Emerson's character, technically, because I think if I was looking at if I remembering the body type of that silhouetted character beforehand correctly, it may have actually been more of the broadness of Anatoly than more of the sort of skinny leanness of Emerson. But arguably, it could have been anybody at this point.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Okay, so before we end the episode, let's do what we promised. We're going to do a ranking of our ranking of the premieres. So because Jasmine is our guest, we'll let her go first. Jasmine, rank the premieres. Which one from you know, however order you want to do it, best to least or least favorite to best, whichever way you want to do it, but give us your rankings.
I will say my least favorite is actually Legends. It probably doesn't surprise, considering it is also the one I critiqued, I guess, the most on this segment. So my least starts with Legends. My second one, I feel, it's weird because I want to put it on The Flash, but it's really close between Flash and Supergirl. They're actually equal in my mind because I feel like they both had goods and bads on different spectrums, but they're very equal. But if I had to pick one above the other, I'd play Flash, then Supergirl. And then my top one actually was Arrow this time. I really did enjoy what they're bringing it. As the mothership of the actual Arrowverse, I was impressed with what they brought to the table.
Cool. Jordan, what was your ranking?
Alrighty, well, I liked to some varying degree all of them, so I don't want to say the one I'm putting last I didn't like, but Flash would be last this week. Then next up would be Legends. Then, Adam, I will say you helped me come around on some of my issues with this Arrow premiere. Even though Arrow is my favorite of the Arrowverse shows,
Quentin Lance can call me if he has a relapse. I'll help him out too.
I still feel like I'm going to put Arrow number two, though, just because I was so blown away by the Supergirl premiere this year. So I feel like you did help me. You did help me with some of my issues with the Arrowverse, with the Arrow premiere. So now it's more so not that I had so many issues with the Arrow premiere, but it was just I was so blown away by Supergirl's premiere this season. So Supergirl number one. How about you, Adam?
All right, here's my ranking. In last place. Unfortunately, it's a Flash. Severe disappointment, as I said. Just ahead of the Flash is Supergirl. In second place is Legends of Tomorrow, and in first place is the flagship of the Arrowverse, Arrow. And that's it's cool that each of our lists is kind of a little different. But it was, you know what, overall it was a good start to the week. The Arrowverse premieres, and it's a good way to kick things off. And I am immensely looking forward to the season. Jordan, we have one piece of business to deal with before we sign off, and that is last week we ran a Multiverse Musings poll.
Oh boy.
So all the listeners know, the question was, which Batman costume looks the best? Not which movie you prefer, but which Batman costume looks the best between Ben Affleck's Batman costume in Batman vs. Superman or Christian Bale's Batman costume in The Dark Knight and The Dark Knight Returns. The Twitter poll results were... BVS Affleck costume 67% to The Dark Knight Rises 33%, and the Facebook poll was nearly identical. So the audience consensus is they went with me and they went with the Batman vs. Superman costume. So that was our first. You know what, I am, because I told you we were talking nonsense, and the majority of online, which usually doesn't agree with me, agreed with me. So I'm going to take that as a win. And what I'm going to do in our second poll, which I'm going to post, well, they'll have the option to vote before they hear this recording, is which Arrowverse premiere was your favorite? Was it Arrow? Was it Legends of Tomorrow? Was it Supergirl? Or was it The Flash? And we'll reveal those results next episode. Thanks, Jasmine, for coming on. We really appreciated having another voice and another fan of these shows on to talk with us.
Our first guest, Multiverse Music.
Yeah, and we hope you enjoyed coming on.
Yes, it was so, Jordan will be able to tell you this, me and him, whenever we end up chilling and hanging out, can talk about Arrowverse shows for forever, it seems like, sometimes. So being able to sit here and discuss my superhero passion, because I love superhero shows no matter what universe you're in, was such enjoyable for me, and meeting you, Adam, as well, because I already know Jordan, was very intensely enjoyable. So thank you all for having me, and I can't wait to do this again.
Yeah, we'll definitely have you.
Thank you, Jasmine. That was great.
We'll definitely have you back, and hopefully the the recorder will let us talk about Wild Dog next time. But until our next episode, we want to wish everybody a good week.
And
I keep forgetting this social media stuff, because I don't know why. But if you, for whatever reason, want to follow me on Twitter, it's at Superhero Sci-Fi. Jordan?
Any place anybody can find you online?
Oh, me. Yes, on Twitter, you can come talk to me about anything comic book related, no matter what, or regular related. I'm at Commander Monkey. It's an old joke from college, so don't anyone get offended by it, but it's at Commander Monkey on Twitter.
All righty. And you can find me on both Twitter and on Instagram. My handle on both is at BatFanJordanV. You can come and debate about the Ben Affleck versus Christian Bale Batman suits if you'd like. And also, I'm going to solicit some more iTunes reviews. So we don't have any yet, but if you enjoyed this episode, we'd love to hear from you, and we'll read it on the show.
And questions, if you have any, ask away on either Twitter or the Multiverse Musings Facebook group. Those are your places to submit questions, and we'll answer them, whatever they are. But until next episode, we hope that you guys have a great week. And until then, so long.
Bye-bye.
Bye.